Well, hey, man, it is so good to see you. We had no idea. I mean, we thought we might have 8 people here tonight. We thought we could have, you know, about 100 like we have. We had no idea. And so, man, really, really exciting to get this off the ground first Wednesday. And, you know, this is something that kind of comes as a result of us just kind of saying, you know, we do a lot to create opportunities on weekends for people to come into this place. Many of you who are Christ followers, who have already taken the step to receive Christ, who are in relationship with Jesus, that build into other people. And we've just been realizing, you know, there's a lot of ways that we already build into one another, grow each other through community groups, through life together groups, you know, through a number of different vehicles. But we realize that, you know, there's some things we could do even corporately like this that really help us go to the next level. And so that's what First Wednesday is really about, as we began to dream this and kind of plan it and put it into motion. And so, man, we're excited to see you here. I mean, this just kind of shows us that, you know, this is something that is needed and desired. And I know half of you don't have any idea what you've walked into tonight. So, you know, so let me give you a little idea of what kind of really, even before this came about, where we began to track on this. About a year ago, I was in a conference with John. We went to Cincinnati to a finance conference. And it wasn't just about finance. It was really about how are we developing and building people. And in that, we came across this continuum that's kind of a continuum on the progress that we go through as we progress in our relationship with Christ. And as we walk through this, we're like, wow, you know, we do some things really well. And of course, on weekends, we always orchestrate toward the 80% of people who aren't in church in our community. My goal and our goal is every single weekend that we're growing everybody, but we still really orchestrate toward, you know, people that are not, maybe haven't been in church in a while, that are leery about walking into church. And as we saw this thing, we said, you know, there's some things we can do at a different environment to build into others. Not that we don't do that on Sunday. But as we saw this, we said, this is a progress, kind of a continuum. And so it looks like this. You know, we realize that we all start as seekers, right? Where we're in this place where we're exploring our faith, where we're discovering, where, you know, people that are seekers that have not come to receive Christ are facing a Christless eternity at that particular point in their lives. Seekers do give. You know, there's seekers that give that have not made a relationship with Christ. It's kind of like a tipping is what we call it. It's like, well, God was pretty good today. I think I'll give him a 5 spot, or maybe he was really good. I'll drop a 10, you know. Seekers are usually not serving. Sometimes they are serving. At Crosspoint, we make opportunities for seekers to get engaged and get involved in volunteering. And then the next phase, you know, that we're trying to move people to is what's known as being a receiver, where we come to the place where we accept God's grace. And this is, you know, this is the point where all of a sudden, whoo, I'm not going to hell anymore. I'm going to heaven. You know, everything's good. You know, I've received Christ. I've taken that step. And one of the unique things that happens here is God's Spirit is planted inside of us. You know, the scripture talks about how there's a new spirit in us when we take that step to receive Christ. There's something new going on inside of us. But we're still at a receiver level, meaning we have not taken, you know, we're not necessarily implementing and following everything that God's, you know, stirring and beginning to nudge us on, but it's there. And so, you know, and this is at this giving serving, and you're going to notice giving and serving are in all of these tonight, because we're going to be talking about this tonight as we get into our topic. But receivers are oftentimes, you know, giving. Maybe they're not tithing. They're saying, yeah, I want to invest in what's happening here. You know, often serving. People have said, hey, I want to volunteer. I want to give back because I've been given to. And so, and one of the things that we've been realizing, and this isn't just a Crosspoint thing, this is a global thing, is that there's like a titanium wall right here to get to the next phase. There's like a almost impenetrable titanium wall right here. And as we've been processing this, and again, this isn't just a Crosspoint thing, this is like a global thing. And this is moving people from being at that place where I receive Christ, I'm beginning to, you know, God's Spirit's in me, I'm beginning to follow and get nudgings, but my life's not exactly being lived the way that, you know, he's designed yet. And the next phase is being a follower. What does it mean to become a follower of Jesus? And that's where, you know, that spirit, that those nudgings begin to take them in and make the changes with Christ's help in my life that begin to make my life look more like the life and the way that God designed us to live. And one of the key attributes of a follower is that we pass the BYSS test. Remember that test? Anybody remember that test? that but because you say so, Jesus, test. That's what that is. You know, there's that moment where Peter is like, I don't really want to do this, Jesus. I don't understand, but because you say so, I'm going to begin to do this. And so, you know, when we become a follower, we quit bartering with God. That's one of the key attributes of a follower. You're not like, well, God, you know, if you give me a really hot girlfriend, you know, then I won't sleep with her anymore. You know, I'll wait till marriage. Or, you know, if you give me a better job, then I'll begin giving. You know, we barter with God a lot. When we become a follower, like, Jesus, because you say so, I'm going to do this. And you know, usually part of following is saying, okay, Jesus, you want me to give. You know, kind of the baseline level, Jesus says, is like giving 10%, a tithe. That's actually the bottom line, the minimum. And then we serve with a rhythm. We begin to say, hey, my life is about giving and serving and impacting others. And then the next phase is what's called a producer, where we get to the mode of reproducing our life. We don't just see that I'm following Jesus, but I begin to understand the whole purpose of my life, regardless of what my occupation is or what I do, is actually to reproduce Christ in other people, reproduce what God has done inside of me into other people. And we begin this sacrificial posture where we're sacrificially giving way above and beyond, you know, the tithe at this point. I mean, this is anywhere from 11% to 90% of what we have. I actually talked with a guy once and said his goal, I think at the time he was given 60% of his income away. His goal was to get to 90 by the time he hit 75, living off 10. Serving as a mode of building into others. I'm not just serving and volunteering, but I actually am doing things to build people, to build disciples at a sacrificial level. And so, you know, the reason I want to share this with you is one of the things we said is, how do we move the needle on this thing? You know, and so part of First Wednesday is for us to, wherever you find yourself, you're probably sitting there going, oh man, where am I at on this thing? You know, well our goal, and this isn't a criticism, all right? This is just, there's a kind of a moment of sober reality when we see this. And I say, okay, where am I? What is it really, where do I fall on this continuum? And our goal of First Wednesday is to move the needle a little bit. You know, to just gradually begin to move the needle up this continuum. So we're gonna get after that tonight. And one of the things we're gonna do, I'm gonna show you a video here in a moment. And this has been a fascinating video. I received this video, and I don't know exactly how it ties in. And I'm gonna be completely honest with you, but it does. Okay. A week ago, I was having a conversation with somebody I hadn't talked to in 20 years on Facebook. I just happened to pop on, and a friend of mine from 20 years ago. It was like, Kurt Walters, I can't believe you're on Facebook. I never see you on here. And here's what she said. She said, I saw this video, and I just tagged you in it, and I just kept thinking all day, I've got to get this to Kurt Walters. I got to talk to Kurt Walters. I have no idea how to get to Kurt Walters. And of course, you know, I'm like, man, am I going to die or something? Like, does she need to talk to me? Because I'm not, like something's going to happen. Does she know something? And we were talking, and, you know, and I you know, we're just going back and forth. She'd had some health issues a few years ago. And so I'm like, hey, how you doing? I heard, you know, you've been recovering from this brain aneurysm. And she's like, I'm fine. She's like, God's telling me you need to watch this video. And, you know, whenever people start talking to me like that, I'm like, so did the brain aneurysm cause her to get wacky? I mean, why is she, like, adamant that she had to talk to me today? So anyway, we quit the conversation, and then I start watching this video. I get about 5 minutes into it, and I realize I've had three people in the last week tell me that I've got to watch this video. And so the backstory on this, you may have seen, it's a guy by the name of Jeremy Cowart, and he is a guy who's a artist. And the backstory of where you're going to pick up with this story is that he was somebody who, as a kid, never really did well in school. You know, the I-step version that he took, he got like 5 percentile, 10 percentile, 15 percentile, totally bombed out of school. But creative things he did really well in. And then, you know, he was always afraid to try things because he never felt like he was good at things. And his dad started building into him this concept of, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And he began to realize, I can actually do things. And his dad really tried to reprogram his brain. And so he kind of fell into this creative posture with, you know, Photoshop and then photography. And he just began to allow God to use him. And so, you know, I don't know if this ties into us moving the needle here or just really realizing that wherever God wants to take me, he can actually take me there if I'm open and willing. And so I take a look at this here in a moment. And if you want to see the full 25 minutes, which will be the best 25 minutes of your week, I guarantee you, it's in the app under First Wednesday. There's a link where you can go home and watch it tonight. So let's take a look at Jeremy.
Friend said, hey, you should buy this new thing called a digital camera. Here we go again. Back to square one. I can't. There's no way. Photography is for smart people. I took one photography class in college and I made a D. My professor seemed to hate me. So I swore off photography for life. I literally told people that I would never become a photographer. So what did I do? I went to the bookstore and bought a book called Digital Photography for Dummies, True Story. I learned about these scary things called f-stop, shutter speeds, ISO, white balance, and more. To my utter surprise, I understood it all. So maybe I wasn't an idiot after all. So I went and bought a whopping 3-megapixel Canon G1 and was ready to take over the world. Next thing you know, I was shooting portraits of my musician friends for fun, and I wasn't awful. So I told all my design clients, hey, I'm taking pictures now too. You know what happened? They started hiring me. Big labels paying me big dollars to photograph people with a 3-megapixel camera, no lie. So photography took off, it's all I wanted to do. I told my business partner and all my clients, hey, I'm just a photographer now, no more design. And it worked. I started landing a lot of gigs. One of those jobs was for another record label, and I ended up beating a well-known Hollywood agent in her roster of celebrity photographers. So she calls me and she said, hey, I'd love to represent you. Your work is amazing. By the way, you know how to light sets, right? Sure. But honestly, I had never lit a big set before. So we signed a deal, and within weeks, I was shooting for TV networks like E! And Fox. And then I got to shoot this guy named Sting. Crazy, right? The immediate success was shocking. I went from amateur photographer to celebrity photographer in just a few months. So since then, I've now photographed a long list of celebrities. The Kardashians, Ryan Seacrest, Taylor Swift, Kelly Clarkson, Carrie Underwood, Gwyneth Paltrow, and many, many more. I've now published 4 photography books. I toured the country with Britney Spears for 3 months as her tour photographer. I photographed President Obama on the very first day of his presidency. I got to document Pope Francis's first visit to the United States. My images have now been published in Rolling Stone, Sports Illustrated, ESPN, Vanity Fair, every other magazine I personally could have dreamed of. I have more than 1 million followers across all the various social networks. I once had my own idea for a social network called OK Do This, and then we spent years, we brought that to life, and it's now free in the App Store for you. I'm now an inventor. I invented some lighting equipment that is going to be released later this year. My work for St. Thomas Health, the hospital I was born in, was recently nominated for an Emmy Award. Ironically, or not so ironically, the name of the campaign was Nothing Shall Be Impossible. In July of 2015, Adweek named me one of 10 visual artists who are changing the way we see advertising and the world. To top it all off recently, Huffington Post named me the most influential photographer on the internet. So I did it. I made it. But wait, so what? Seriously, who cares? Was being a photography rock star really my goal? I realized that I shouldn't aim for greatness and stop there. Greatness should serve a greater purpose. So what was my greater purpose? That led me to the idea of giving photos away to people in need. I gathered together a few photography friends and we spent the day at a gym giving photos away to people in need. I put a simple video on Facebook showing how the day went and people responded with, hey, I want to be a part of this if you ever want to do it again. So that's when I had the idea. What if this was a global event where photographers did this all over the world? No way, I can't. Global? You see, that thinking that my parents instilled in me not only helped me overcome my challenges and insecurities, but it blew off my limitations and opened up the world to me. So why not start a global movement? 9 months later, I put the idea on my blog and social media, and word spread fast. So what happened that December 12th of 2009? 3,400 photographers and 5,000 volunteers responded, and they gave away 41,000 portraits in 543 locations in 42 countries around the world. Since then, the number is now approaching 100,000 people that have given away nearly 500,000 portraits in 70 countries in every American state. But it's not the numbers that count, it's the stories.
God, I don't know what that video that we just saw says to every single one of us. Probably something different. And yet, God, we're here in this room tonight because we want to be open to the possibilities of what you can do. The possibilities of what you're already doing, of what you've already started. And God, I just pray that tonight you open us up. You would just help us to be in a posture, God, where we can sense you. I mean, there's this really cool things happen right now here in this community, in this team, as we've come to this place of surrender. We're hearing you in different ways, and God, we just want to continue to stay in tune with that. And so tonight I just pray that you would continue to do that, continue to speak to us. I pray that you would visit us tonight. In your name, amen. All right, like I said, if you want to see the full version of that, I'm like in tears right here, sitting here already. You can check that out on the button on the app. So tonight, we're going to be talking, every time we do a First Wednesday, we're going to kind of stay in the theme of whatever we're talking about. We're really excited to kick this one off in the middle of Game Change. And just to kind of recap where we've been, last weekend we looked at 1 Timothy chapter 6, and this is where the Apostle Paul said this. He said, command those who are rich, that word that we all want to disengage from, but we can't, in this present world, not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. And so one of the reasons that I love this verse is, you know, in America, none of us think we're rich, right? I mean, but we're all rich, right? I mean, and if statistics, you know, were any indicator, and these are a few years old, but they're still relevant today, you know, if you make an average household income of $40,000 total household income, do you realize you're in the top 4 to 5% of wage earners in the world? Man, I thought you guys would be like giving a standing ovation for that. Like, you don't seem very excited about that. You know, here's a better one. Do you realize that if you make $50,000 annual household income, total income for your home, you're in the top 1% of wage earners in the world? So you're not feeling very rich right now, are you? See, it's interesting because it doesn't make us feel any better. And one of the reasons it doesn't make us feel better is because so many times we're more focused on what we don't have as opposed to what we have. And so this process we've been going through over these last 3 weeks and for the next couple of surrendering and listening and saying, okay, God, everything's yours is a really important process. Now, because we don't feel rich, right? In fact, one of the richest moments I've ever felt in my life was back when I got my very first landscaping job. I remember I was working for a guy by the name of Roy, and he was a contractor, and I would do work around his place, and he was paying me a whopping $6 an hour. I remember working 20 hours the first week, and he paid me $120, right? $120. And I just remember thinking, oh, my word, what am I going to do with all of this money? You know, because I'd never had that much money before, and I was a saver at that time, so I put it into, you know, my savings account. We were trying to save for like a snowmobile and a couple other, you know, fun things, and I just remember thinking, wow, I am so rich right here in the ninth grade, so rich. I've never felt that way since then, but so you may not feel rich right now. I don't always feel rich, but the truth is, man, compared to the world standard, I mean, we are very, very wealthy. In fact, right here in our community, even in the United States, we are in our community very, very wealthy in comparison to most people in our country. Now, just to make you feel a little bit better, I shared this with you Sunday. You know, if you have a car, you're rich. I don't know if you knew that or not. If your car has its own house, we call them garages, then you're rich, right? If your car, if its house has like bicycles and snowblowers and you know, lawnmowers in it, guess what? You're rich. If you have to have a conversation with your car, you have to say, you know, oh, sweet car, you know I love you and I want to take care of you, but I've got to kick you out of your house because I've got so too much stuff in your house. And so you have to like put your car out on the driveway to make room for your stuff in the car's house. You know, this means we're rich, right? I mean, if you have a copay, you're rich. If you have a savings account of anything that you're not planning to use in the next 30 days, guess what? You're rich. And so, here's one that we don't like to think about. If you've traded anything in the last year that worked perfectly fine, but it just wasn't the latest model, and you thought, well, I really need to upgrade, well, that's what rich people do. All right, and so we don't always feel this, but we can't get away from this idea that we are rich. And so tonight, I want to really launch this first Wednesday. What I want to do is we're going to dive into Scripture as we always do. We're going to go quite a bit deeper on it. And we're even going to look at a verse that you like to quote all the time. And you guys have probably said this 100 times, but we don't really understand the context of where this verse came from. So my goal tonight is to shift our thinking, to move the needle on that continuum and to challenge us really through Scripture into, you know, maybe moving along and where we are down that continuum. So because in our culture, there are so many messages around us that you know, are trying to motivate us to be generous, and they're not bad messages, all right? Many of us get caught up in those messages, and that's fine, and we're generous because of those messages in our culture, but the New Testament gives a very, very specific call, a very specific charge, a very specific reason on why we're to be generous, why we're to be, you know, incredibly generous, why we're to be extraordinarily generous with our time and with our finances. And the reason that it gives is probably not one that you would think of, all right? So I want to tell you a few things that it's not before we get into what it is, all right? So the reason we're supposed to serve and the reason we're supposed to give isn't because, you know, we have more than other people. That's one of the messages of our culture. Well, you have so much more, you need to give. Well, that's an important thing. That's not a bad message, but that's not the reason of the first century of the New Testament. In fact, one of the things that happened in the first century was really cool was, you know, one of the hallmarks of first century Christians was that they were very, very poor. And the reason they were very poor is because they would often quit their jobs or even have to quit being involved in political arenas, because if they were engaged in those arenas, it would require them to worship other gods that were not the one true God. And so they would actually give up their jobs in order to honor Christ with their lives. And so, you know, Christians were in communities that just didn't have a lot. And so, you know, they were considered, though, some of the most generous people of the world at that time. And this was always interesting because, you know, this would get the attention of the pagans. Now, the pagans, that was a name they used back then for people who were disinterested in God. And so pagans, this would get the attention of the pagans because, like, you Christians have nothing, and yet you live so generously. In fact, in our world today, this is really still the case. If you look globally at statistics, you know, wherever good is being done, wherever, you know, generosity is being expressed in the world, it is often being led by people who are Christ followers, people who are affiliated with a church or attend church on a regular basis. But the reason for that isn't just because as Christians we have more. You know, the other reason that we're not motivated to be generous, not with our time or our finances, isn't just because, and this is a good motivation, but it's not just because we ought to, all right? It's not like, well, you know, we need to be fair, and since you have more and they have less, then, you know, you need to, you know, give to them. Now, that's not a bad idea or way to think. It's just not what we see in the New Testament. All right. In fact, the truth is, and you can think about this more when you leave, all right, there's another rabbit hole to go down. But the truth is, there's absolutely no correlation between what you have and how much somebody else doesn't have and what you need to do for them. There's absolutely no correlation there. All right? There's no logical correlation between what you have, what somebody else doesn't have, and what you need to do. Now, we have an emotional correlation there, right? We see them and we're like, oh my word, I have so much. They don't have much. I ought to do something. All right, but there's no rational correlation between the two. All right, you just have more than they do. End of story. All right, but in our culture, we leverage generosity based on this idea of you know, oh, you have so much more, so we need to give to those who have less. Now, when you open the New Testament, all right, when you open the New Testament and you look at people that Jesus is calling to serve one another extraordinarily generously with their time, you know, in an extraordinary way with their finances, you know, people who are fueling kingdom initiatives that are changing lives, Jesus gives an entirely different idea to why this is happening. And so Jesus teaches us this core thing. Here's what he teaches us. He teaches us that we are to do more and give more. We're going to look at a verse that talks about this. We're to do more and give more out of gratitude, but not out of gratitude because of the stuff we have. Right? We're to do more and give more out of gratitude, but not just because of a sense of, oh man, I have so much. Right? And this is a really powerful idea right here, okay? This is why Christians historically have done more and been more generous throughout history than any other faith group or people group, right? And here's the other thing that you've probably already connected the dots on, but I need to get it out on the open, okay? There's no correlation between those who are rich and those who are generous. Right? We think, well, you know, those who are rich are way more generous. There's no correlation. In fact, usually people who have more are less generous per capita than people who have less. All right, so whether you're rich or poor or anywhere in the middle, extraordinary generosity has nothing to do with either side, but simply because we've come to the place of understanding this simple thing that Jesus shows us. All right, so I want you to listen to these verses in Luke right here. All right, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. These are the authorized biographies of Jesus' life, and this is why Jesus is so amazing right here. Okay, because. You know, many ancient figures have like one book about him. Jesus has four different writings that characterize what he did, tell about his life. And so this is, it's uncannily accurate when we see how these things parallel one another. And so in Luke chapter 6, begin with verse 27, and one other thing, if you've read, really deeply read the words of Jesus, you know he can say some pretty kind of extreme things, right? I mean, you know, Jesus says things that make you go, what? Jesus, what are you talking about right here, right? I mean, it's like when you're talking with your kids and you say some extreme thing and they're like, what? Mom, seriously? You know what happens when you do that? You lean in, right? You're like, what? And so this is what Jesus is doing right here, all right? I told you, these things are going to stretch us, all right? These are like the outrageous things that Jesus calls us to right here, all right? So Luke chapter 6, verse 27, here he goes. He says, but to you who are listening, which would be all of us right here, I say, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who mistreat you, which makes us all go, what? You just say it out loud with me. 1, 2, 3. What? Yeah, that's what we do, right? We're like, seriously? You know, this is what, are you kidding? I mean, you know, and you've heard me say this before, and this is somewhat of a confession. I don't even pray for the people that I love that well sometimes, right? I mean, I don't even, you know, pray sometimes for my friends. I don't even do good the way I want to for the people that I care about in my life. And yet Jesus is asking me to spend time in prayer for people who are my enemies. Seriously, that's what you want me to do, Jesus? I mean, you want me to spend time, my free time, doing things for people who are never going to give back to me, who are never going to, you know, they're just going to continue doing evil, never going to reciprocate. Seriously, this is what you want me to do? It's kind of like, Jesus, what's your standard here, right? Like, what planet are you from? Where, you know, you're on planet Earth right now. You want us to live this way? And he's like, now that I have your undivided attention, let's go on. So verse 29. He says, an illustration. He gives us kind of a picture. He says, if somebody slaps you on one cheek, turn to them the other also. And you're like, why would I do that? I mean, did you guys not have lawsuits in the first century or something? Like, why would I do that? He keeps going. He says, if somebody takes your coat, and this is crazy, somebody takes your coat, do not withhold your shirt from them. It's like if they take your coat, you're like, whoa, don't run away. Don't like take it and run. Like, here, let me give you my shoes. Let me give you my belt. Here, actually just take my wallet if you want that. You know, and you're like, who does that? And then he goes on, verse 30. Give to everyone who asks you, to which you say, really? Have you ever been at 465 in Keystone? I mean, have you ever sat there, you know, with a person on every corner? And he says, and if anyone takes what belongs to you, do not demand it back. Now, I don't know who his audience was fully at this particular point, right? But this seems a bit ridiculous. And we start running through all the arguments in our mind, right? We're like, well, man, nobody can make a living if they do that. I mean, if I live that way, you couldn't survive. I wouldn't have enough money to pay my bills if I live this way. But again, everybody's listening now because they're going, what? What? Jesus, what are you talking about? Like, what world are you from? How does this work? And then Jesus, in his brilliant teaching way, he begins to funnel down, takes these real broad concepts that he's hitting, he begins to funnel down and really narrow in. And everybody's like, you know, okay, Jesus, we're a bit confused here, right? Because you've like messed all our categories up. I thought I was supposed to be generous with people who looked like if I help them, they're going to get it all together. I thought that, you know, giving to someone, whoever asked me was more, my focus was to look at them and go, well, you know, are you sure? I don't know if I should give to you. I mean, you just look like you don't want to go out and get a job. I mean, I'm going to help you just not keep not going out and getting a job. I mean, if I give you my coat, what are you going to do with my coat anyway? I mean, you know, seriously, I mean, what, you know, you don't even look like an honest person. Why? I'm just going to enable you. I thought that was my job, was to figure that out. See, my focus in these moments is always, the tendency is always that when someone wants something, for me to look at that person and make a judgment call and say, okay, yeah, oh, geez, size them up. All right, is this really going to be a good investment right here? You know, and Jesus is wanting to change our thinking right here. All right? So now he takes us to the next step, and he says something we've all heard before. This is the line we all love, all right? We love this line. You've used this, especially when you want something. All right, here's what Jesus says, summarizing everything he just said. He says, do to others as you would have them do to you. Oh, that's different, Jesus. Because, I mean, if I need a coat, I mean, if I come to you and say, man, I need a coat, I would expect you'd just be like, oh, okay, you'd take my word for it. I mean, I don't want you like sizing me up and being like, well, does Kurt really need a coat? I mean, just, you know, if I need your coat, I'm going to come say, hey, I need your coat. And I expect you to trust me and you to like legitimately like give me your coat because it's a legitimate question. And I really, see, Jesus is trying to shift our focus right here. He's saying, you tend to focus on the person, but what if you were the one in need? What if you were the one that you know, when you're the one going to ask somebody else to do something for you, and you just want it done for you, right? And you're like, oh, yeah. And so what you're saying, Jesus, is generosity, when it comes to service, isn't as much about the person that I'm interacting with and serving. It's actually different than that. He's like, yeah, what if it was you? What if it was you? It's like he's turning it around right here. And if we stop right here, this becomes a really compelling argument, right? If every time we see somebody in need and I go, oh, what if that was me? Well, of course I want to jump in. I mean, what if that was my son? What if that was my daughter who needed this right here? What if that was me? I wouldn't want people judging me. I wouldn't want people sizing me up saying, oh, man, I don't know if Kurt really needs that or not. I mean, I want people to take my, if I need something, I just expect you to help me. Jesus doesn't stop right there. Because he's a brilliant communicator. So he continues on. And now he's like dislodged us enough from our former way of thinking that he begins to rebuild something for us here. Verse 32. He says, if you love those who love you, and then he introduces a brand new word right here. He says, if you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? You're like, credit? Hang on, I didn't think we were talking about credit. You know, even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those, which means when you do good, you serve, you're a blessing to them, you give to those who are good to you, what credit is that to you? And we're like, credit? I didn't know we were talking about credit. What's credit have to do with this? Who's the credit to? For what is the credit for right here? I thought my job was just to make sure my donations, what I'm giving financially and with my time, was a legitimate, you know, cause. And I was just trying to size it up and make sure that, and you're asking me to turn around. And what if it was you? And Jesus, man, you got me all confused right here. You know, he's like, but what if you do the things only for people that would do those back to you? You know, or if you know that, well, if I do this for you, I'm really going to see something happen, so it's a legitimate thing. Or, you know, if I love you, then I know I'm going to get some reciprocation on that. And you're like, credit? What are we talking about credit for right here? I mean, it's totally confusing. And then he goes on, verse 33, he says, if you do good to those who are good to you, which is what I do, I don't know if you do that, but I find myself falling this way, what credit is that to you? So if you only love the people that love you, he's basically saying you don't get any credit. And you're like, well, what's the credit for? He's like, if you only do good for people who do good to you, they return the favor, you're not going to get credit for that. I'm like, I didn't know we were talking about credit. It's kind of like, Jesus, come on. Just make the point. I don't know what you're saying right here. Verse 34. And if you lend to those from whom you expect repayment, and you're like, well, isn't that the purpose of lending? Like, isn't that the responsible thing to do? Like, I lend it and I expect you to pay it back. I mean, isn't it irresponsible to lend to somebody who I think is going to be irresponsible and not? He says, if you lend to those from whom you expect repayment, what credit is that to you? And there's that word again, credit. What are we doing with this? Somehow I'm supposed to love people who don't love me. I'm supposed to give to people who are just going to continue to do their thing. I'm supposed to lend to people who likely, you know, I'm not necessarily expecting it to be paid back. And there's this whole credit thing. And what's the credit for? To whom is that for? What is it for? He goes on. He says, even sinners. This is crazy right here. He goes, even sinners lend to sinners expecting to be repaid in full. He's like, even, and I don't think this is an indictment on the banking industry, by the way. All right? I really don't. I think this is broader than the banking industry. I think he's talking to all of us who have stuff. I think he's saying, hey, look, even sinners make agreements and arrangements. You have to be a Christ follower to make an agreement to borrow money from somebody and then pay it back. All right? He says, look, everybody does that, but if you lend to someone and they pay you back, you're not getting any credit. I mean, he keeps talking about credit. You're like, what are you talking about? Jesus, you've messed my categories up. I thought I was supposed to serve people who I was going to be able to impact and change. I thought I was supposed to love on people who were going to love me back. I thought I was to lend to people who were going to be responsible and pay me back. And then you tell me, well, what if it was you? And so now I'm like, oh, my word, what if it's my son? What if it's my daughter? And now you're saying we only love those and serve those, and we don't worry about if they can pay us back. And if they do pay us back, then we don't get any credit? Jesus, what are you talking about? See, Jesus is building a case right here. He's building a case. And what he's talking about, he hasn't talked anything about fairness, right? I mean, in fact, he's not leveraged the fair word at all. We like the fair word, right? He hasn't leveraged that, well, you have more, so it's fair if you give more back. In fact, he's actually completely ignored it. Makes no mention of it. He turns the whole thing around, and he's talking about credit. Credit. What's this credit? All right, here we go, verse 35. He says, love your enemies, do good to them, which means serve them, and lend to them without expecting to get anything back. See, when I was first learning to serve, when I was first learning what it meant to serve people, less fortunate, kind of the cultural title, I remember going down in some really impoverished areas and serving kids and Bible schools and just, providing some fun moments for them. I remember serving at a soup kitchen, serving a meal and thinking, man, I don't even know how these people are eating this stuff. It stinks. I can't even stand in here. And yet they think it's great because it's all they have. I remember, on Friday nights in college going to the Pendleton Reformatory for 4 years straight every Friday night, sitting with inmates, just talking about God and spiritual things. And my thing, and this was pretty hard for me to get over. See, my thing was, if these people aren't getting any better, why are we doing this? I mean, if these people aren't changing, I mean, why are we doing this? I mean, if these people aren't becoming more responsible, or, these guys in prison aren't feeling more remorse, and like, why are we doing this? I mean, aren't I just enabling their imperfect and their improper and their irresponsible behaviors? Aren't I just throwing my money away if I continue to go? I mean, they're being irresponsible, and that's not necessarily a bad way to think. It's just not the way Jesus introduces in the New Testament this whole idea of people who have decided that they want to give and lend and serve the way he wants us to give and lend and serve. And so what he's saying is, hey, you're going to get credit, but it's not going to be from the response that they give you. Which means, Kurt, if you go, give or lend or serve or do because you're expecting something back from them, that's not going to happen. That's not the point. And then he goes on, back to 35. Let's reread this again. He says, but love your enemies, do good to them, lend to them without expecting to get anything back, including change, including any sense of responsible behavior. And then he goes on, your reward, and he introduces a whole new word right here, then your reward. And you're like, wait a second. So first we get credit or we don't get credit. Like, what's that about? And then you're talking about a reward. Now, I thought the reward was when I went back down to the soup kitchen and, or to the area where I was serving. I'm like, and somebody says to me, Kurt, because you came down here, you know what? That has blessed me so much. It's encouraged me. I have actually picked myself up and I've gone out and got a job, and I just want to thank you for what you've done. I thought that was my reward when I got some kind of payback like that. And he's like, no. See, when you think that way, you're still thinking about you. You're still thinking about, well, what does this have to do with me? It's not about you. He says, then your reward will be great, and you will be children of the Most High God. What? Yeah. Your reward's going to be great, and then you're going to be considered like or synonymous with being children of the Most High God because he is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. Ah, so what you're saying, Jesus, is I'm supposed to do to others because my God, my Heavenly Father, has done this to others. And others includes you and me. So why am I supposed to serve and be generous and do more and give more? Because when you're doing this, Kurt, you're actually becoming just like me. So this isn't really about them, right? No. This isn't about them. This is about you becoming just like me. It's like God saying, you know, Kurt, it's like this. You know, remember when you were kind of like had no clue I existed? Remember when you were kind of like an idiot to faith, Kurt? You've all been there, right? Remember when you just ignored God? Remember when you were out, you know, and you're praying your silly little prayers, you know, you're like, well, every night, you're like, Jesus, forgive me. I filled my sin bucket up today. I need my sin bucket erased, and I need to go back out tomorrow and fill it up again. And, you know, just keep coming back. That was like junior high years for me, where I just kept coming back with my sin bucket. And, you know, or you'd go to your priest or whatever your tradition is. And it's like God saying, you know, Kurt, remember when you played those silly little games and prayed those silly little prayers? And I'm like, I still pray those at times, all right? I mean, it's not like I fully moved past those fully altogether, but God's like, how did I treat you when you were doing that? Oh, gosh, you were generous. You were merciful. Man, you didn't strike me down with lightning. I mean, you didn't make my nose grow because I lied all the time. I mean, you put up with me, and you were very, very generous and patient with me. God says, Kurt, the reason that you're to do more and to give more and to serve more isn't because you have more. The reason you're to do more and give more and serve more isn't because you ought to. It's not a fairness thing. He says, I want you to be extraordinarily service-minded. I want you to be extraordinarily, you know, financially giving-minded because that's how I am. And if you do that, you're going to become more like me. And the question I wanted all of us to wrestle with tonight is, you know, I mean, we're in the midst of a generosity campaign, right? I mean, we're in the midst of a game-change deal. And yet, if I can be really honest with you, we're not raising money. I mean, we are raising money. It's like a byproduct of what we're doing. What we're doing through this process is we're raising people. We're raising disciples. We're raising a team that looks and acts more and more like Jesus. I mean, yeah, the initiative's about infrastructure and making sure we have strong foundations, but honestly, the strongest foundation is raising this team up and raising us to a place where we continually look and act and surrender and give generously with Jesus as our backdrop, more and more like him. So I'm going to put this continuum up. And you know, you probably identified where you were earlier. You probably were like, oh, man, maybe I'm right here. And here's the thing with the continuum. We always have to fall back to the place that's our lowest denominator. Like, we'd like to think, man, I'm a producer, man. But you know, if we fall into some of the categories back, I mean, we have to say, okay, well, that's where I am. There's some things Jesus still has to grow in me to get to that point. But I believe Jesus wants to get every single one of us to the producer level. I mean, that's what he's doing, right? He's reproducing people to continue to carry his message forward. And so I want you to look at this as we kind of wrap up. And I want you to just think, you know, what's my next step? We didn't give you formal next steps. We're kind of leaving this wide open. You know, we're just trusting, as we've been doing all week, that maybe God's prompting and nudging and speaking to us. And man, it's been pretty cool how God's been doing that this week. But God, you know, what are you saying to me about what my next step is to move the needle from wherever I am to the next place? I mean, it's probably many of us that are still at the receiver level. We're here, we're excited, we're like, man, I want to grow. You know, there's a wall there that you've got to break through. The Spirit's in you, but maybe it's getting really clear on just beginning to say, Jesus, because you said so, I'm going to begin to do this. And I have all the arguments why I shouldn't, but because you say so. And we begin to incorporate Jesus' ways of life more and more into our marriages, into our finances, into the way we parent our kids, into the decisions we make day in, day out. Maybe it has to do with a giving level of saying, okay, Jesus, because you say so, If you say, well, yeah, I mean, the old tithe of the Old Testament, yeah, that's like a bottom line standard. I'm actually calling you to do more. Maybe that's where we start. Maybe it's serving with a rhythm. If you're in a follower posture, if you're a follower, you're like, you know, I do those things. All right, you know, God, what do you want me to do? What's my next step to move to more sacrificial living, to more sacrificial giving? To where I begin to see my life as maybe something bigger where, yeah, it's not about me just arriving like Jeremy Coward. It's about me saying, okay, what, God, what are you doing here? And how can you use me to shape the world? And so I just want to give you a moment. This hard stuff. These are only 9 verses of Jesus' teaching, by the way. All right, there's like 10 more right after. They're equally as hard. But the goal isn't to go from 5 or 6 on the continuum to 100 all in one fell swoop. It's to say, okay, how can I move the needle? I just want you to spend a moment. You know, if you want to close your eyes, you can do that. Just say, God, I want you to communicate. What is it looking like as I'm processing everything we're going through right now for me to move the needle on this deal? Give you a space to do that. This is hard stuff, and I'm going to tell you, I've been inserted into a couple situations this week that have really, really challenged me on this week. Things that were outside of me, I mean, I didn't necessarily create them, but I tell you what, I've been wrestling with what it means for me to be generous when somebody is coming at me and taking and asking and taking and asking. What's the posture that Jesus wants me to be in? As I'm in these situations, I tell you what, God's been very real in there, but it's a challenge. It's a challenge. One more verse I want us to look at, and this is really the dagger in the whole deal, and yet it's the thing that is so encouraging. You know, Jesus closes this section right here, and here's his summary of the whole section. Verse 36, he says, "Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful." So when I see someone in need, I'm to be merciful not because of the need I see in them, but because God has been merciful in me. Yeah, that's why, right there. Because see, if I see somebody and I say, okay, how would Kurt be merciful? I'm going to be about this merciful right there. I'm gonna size him up. I'm gonna say, oh, I don't know if they deserve that. I don't know if that's a good, you know, good investment. But when I use Jesus as my backdrop, when I use my Heavenly Father as my backdrop, you know, my mercy gets a lot broader. And I begin to be reminded of how much I've been given mercy and how much God has been forgiving with me and how much grace has come my way. And so I want us to kind of just dwell in that in these next few minutes. You know, Jesus actually gave us an experience, and we're gonna share in it tonight, called the Eucharist, the Lord's Supper, Holy Communion. This event that he instituted that we would use to remember. In fact, he said, every time you meet together in a setting like this, I want you to celebrate my death and resurrection, how I gave of myself, how I was merciful to you. I want you to remember how much of your stuff I took on my back and how much grace you've actually received. Because when you do this, when you go through this process, you come out more graceful and more forgiving. And filled with more mercy for others because you've been reminded of how much grace you've actually been given yourself. And so, you know, this is something we're going to do every time we gather in this first Wednesday. And, you know, and Jesus, you know, he was with his team and he just took the bread and he said, hey, this is my body. And every time you eat this bread and you drink this cup, I want you to remember my body, which was broken for you. You didn't deserve it. I could have sized you up. I could have, there's no way. You haven't even turned an eye my way. And yet while you were still out doing your gig, I did this for you. So I want us to stand, and we're going to share in this in a moment and just dwell in the grace and the mercy of Christ. Let's stand. Let me pray for us. God, thank you. Thank you for your incredible grace, your incredible mercy, for your incredible love. Thank you, God, for this moment. And God, I'm just praying right now, man, that we've been challenged tonight by this incredible teaching that you has been preserved from you. I mean, this incredible message of what it means to love others, to give more, to do more. And God, I just pray that we would continue to be in an open posture for whatever it is that you are calling us toward on both of those fronts. Because God, we know that when that happens, man, the kingdom grows and we grow because we're becoming more like you. So God, in these next moments, we just, we worship you, we thank you, and we thank you for your incredible sacrifice. And God, I just pray that you would help us feel the weight and the joy of the mercy and the ongoing mercy that you've continued to give in us. As we sing, we invite you to come to the table and share in the bread and the cup.